March 7th, 2016. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 634 of the Willich Experience podcast on Sports Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I am here on a very early Tuesday morning with Allison Futter. I'm mostly awake. How awake are you, Allison?
I'm very awake, actually, because I actually have an early assignment at the Team USA workout today. So as soon as we're done, I'm heading out there, and Jim Leland has a little press conference at 9 o'clock, and then there's a team workout. And, yeah, so it's kind of like a normal spring training game. This is spring training day. This is pretty much this would be when I'm kind of on my way to the ballpark anyway.
I keep forgetting that Jim Leland is managing Team USA. Joe Torre is the general manager, and Jim Leland right. is the manager, and it feels like 1999 again.
Yes, it's kind of fun. I think the guys are excited. I've been reading some of the quotes from the USA players, and they're kind of excited to play for him. So, you know, some of these young guys that obviously never had the opportunity to play for him, and he's probably going to go in the Hall of Fame someday. So I think that they're looking forward to that. There was one player, and I'm trying to remember which one it was, who got a text from Joe Torre asking him to participate as a member of Team USA, and he thought he was kidding because he's like, why would Joe Torre be texting me? This
yeah. I hope he didn't send like an emoji. That feels very yeah. un-Joe Torre like.
Like a poop emoji?
Yeah, exactly. or just, you know, shrug. Joe Torre, shrug.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that'll be fun. I'm excited. I've been getting into the WBC already. I kind of want to start with that. The big story of the WBC so far, and as much as a big story can be when the games start at 4:30 in the morning and 11:30 at night, right. but has been Team Israel. Team Israel is won its first two games. First, in a very close game against Korea, one of the favorites in that bracket, and then wiping out Chinese Taipei. And so Israel, which I think is the team that was clearly, I think they're ranked 41st in the country in the world, which is like below like Ukraine, which I didn't even know they had baseball in Ukraine. But one of the most fun things about Israel, because they've won two games now, it looks. It's going to be very difficult for them not to advance at this point. My favorite thing about Israel, there's two fun things about Israel. One is one of the things I love about the World Baseball Classic is a lot of times it brings back old baseball names. People you've not seen in baseball for a while, you're like, oh my gosh, I completely forgot about Ryan LaVarnway. I completely right. forgot about Craig Breslow. Jason Marquis is playing for this team.
Right.
And they won both games. Ike Davis is like probably their best hitter. Sam Fold is on the team. It's very difficult not to find Israel very likable. And that's also because the second reason I'm excited about Israel, they have a little mascot. They have a little mascot named the Minch on the Bench.
Yep.
It is, and he is life size. They bring him with them. They had to, Cody Decker, one of the players on the team, talked to ESPN. He said that he was their Joe Boo, said they gave him Manischewitz. They said they felt very terrible that he had to be packed with the bags on the flights out to Korea rather than fly in first class. They asked, according to like where he is during the game. Decker said he is everywhere and nowhere all at once. His actual location is irrelevant because he exists in a higher metaphysical plane, but he's always near. I am so rooting for Israel in this tournament.
Yeah, let's not forget that as soon as Cody Decker comes to the end of his playing career, whenever that will be, he will be a filmmaker. He is a highly entertaining person. He makes these short films that are hysterical. And, you know, he's got a wicked sense of humor, and he's real smart. And so I think that we're seeing. So it's nice that he's been kind of a spokesperson for this team. Yes, I mean, of course, you know, I am absolutely rooting for Israel because those are my people. I didn't really think that they were going to win any of their games. So it's not like I was sitting on the edge of my seat and like, you know, getting up in the morning and when I was like checking the MLB at bat thinking, you know, that this turnout was going to be this thing that it's been. So it's really cool. You know, let's not forget, you know, we laugh at like some of the names like that you mentioned. I mean, these guys played Major League Baseball. Like even the players that were not spectacular as Major League players are still extremely talented baseball players. And you know, Jason Marquis had a nice long career. you just never know what you're going to get at this time of year in that setting. It's impossible to be able to handicap any of these matchups because it's just so random. I mean, everyone is like picking the USA team to be in the finals. And I'm like, they could easily get bounced, not because they're not loaded. They are loaded, but they're loaded with players who are in spring training. And so when it comes to like, you know, Team Israel, I mean, I don't know, they had this great trip over to Israel in January. They bonded, they had this amazing experience, changed a lot of their perspectives on life, which sounds weird, but it did. And they were just all together. So now they're back together, and who knows what Quebec can do. They're just having a good time. And look at that, you know, they just walloped on, Chinese Taipei. I mean, they scored like 15 runs or something. I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty good, even if you're facing not so great pitching.
Yeah, it's great. So they play the Netherlands on Wednesday at 10 o'clock. These games are on MLB Network. I love that stadium they're playing in South Korea. It feels very 90s, very 80s baseball. With like, it's got like the old Cardinals artificial turf, Ozzie Smith, everything going fast. It's fun. Like, you know, one of the most fun thing about the World Baseball Classic, I think, is another reason why it's not as popular here among non-baseball people, because the U.S. doesn't really take it as seriously. And frankly, the U.S. team is, as good as they are, is not necessarily one of the more interesting teams. We see these people play all the time. It's fun right. to watch the different style of baseball played in Cuba and played in Japan, and to have this collection of players. The Israel team has been called the Jamaican bobsled team of the tournament, except they're winning, so it just makes it even more exciting. So I think that's great, and that is my definite team to root for as this thing gets going. And there's been some shit, but nevertheless, it's also going to be difficult to root against a Jim Leland team with USA across the cover. So that's the fun of the World Baseball Classic, and it also gets us through March quicker toward actual games. One thing you mentioned you wanted to talk about this week. I have many thoughts about this as well. You wanted to talk about Bartolo Colon.
So here's what I don't understand.
Okay.
I don't even know where to start with. Okay, so Bartolo Colon is 42 years old, and he's still pitching, and he's like this lovable guy. And look, I fully admit that my company, MLB.com, he's a meme. He is a cult figure. They do cut fours on him all the time because he's big and he's kind of goofy looking. He's big. And, you know, he hits home runs every once in a lifetime. And so he's just like this really fun guy. He served a 50-game suspension for PEDs for testosterone in 2012. And I just find it fascinating, like when I go from team to team and you talk to different people, you talk to some Hall of Famers, you talk to some people that are on the team now, and they have these like really like anger feelings about the Hall of Fame and guys that might get in and the Barry Bonds and the Roger Clemens of the world. And maybe that's what's fueling their anger, is that these guys actually might get into the Hall of Fame. Clearly, Bartolo Colon is not getting into the Hall of Fame. But I just think it's amazing that in one breath, they can just be like, I'm so mad about the PED era. And then the next breath, they're like, Bartolo Colon is one of my favorite pitchers. Like, he is so good for these young players. He comes onto a team, he injects energy and enthusiasm. And he is so, and isn't that amazing that he's still playing at 42? He's still pitching. I'm like, he literally was kicked out of the game for 50 games for doing things to make him bigger, stronger, faster. So I don't know. Do you have an opinion on this? I don't even think I'm mad about it. I think the word is fascinating. I don't even think that I'm like upset at Bartolo Colon for any reason.
Yeah. Well, it's fine. First off, I will dispute one fact. Bartolo Colon is going to pitch for another 30 years. So he will, in fact, be playing and make it to the Hall of Fame. I don't want to hear anything otherwise. So first off, there's that. Secondly, I think this leads into the larger kind of, frankly, hypocrisy that people have about PEDs. I think people get mad at players who use PEDs that they already don't like. And another example of this I would use is Andy Pettit. Everybody likes Andy Pettit. I like Andy Pettit. You like Andy Pettit. Andy Pettit's a really likable guy. Yeah. He also used HGH. Now, he claimed it was one time. It was just one time. And I suppose that it would be certainly Andy Pettit's unique misfortune if the one time he ever used HGH happened to be the time that he got caught. I suppose that is possible. It's unlikely. Poor son of a gun, that guy. Or I think it's more likely that we naturally like Andy Pettit, and therefore we tend to not worry about that or believe him in a way that makes no sense, in a way that we didn't like A-Rod, specifically you definitely don't like A-Rod. We didn't like A-Rod. We didn't like Bonds. We didn't like Roger Clemens. This, like, for some reason, I think we use PED stuff as a cudgel with which to bludgeon people that we already dislike, but players that may have been involved in this, David Ortiz being an example on this. David Ortiz, who again has been very clear that he does not know how his name got in there and he did not test positive for any test. And frankly, it's ridiculous that he should have ever had to deal with it anyway, because that test was supposed to be confidential. That said, David Ortiz's name is attached to PEDs a lot more than, say, Sammy Sosa's is. But we don't like Sammy Sosa. People all decided at one point they didn't like Sammy Sosa and therefore put him in the PED basket as a negative against him. Whereas someone like David Ortiz, who we really like, or Andy Pettit, who we really like, or Bartolo Colon, who we really like, who in addition to the testosterone thing you're talking about, remember when he came back, he also had this weird, like, bone marrow stem cell thing that he did that was technically legal, but all of a sudden he got it and whoa, Bartolo Colon could pitch again. That's amazing. You know, so to me, I would argue, I don't personally care. Like, I don't care at all. I don't care if, I mean, we've discussed this before. I don't care if these players, I put it this way. I think in 20 years, it's going to seem ridiculous that we all got insane about this, because the drugs will be so much better and there will be no side effects and everyone will be using them, and it won't even, what we'll think more about with McGuire and Bonds is that they use these remedial drugs necessarily, that they used drugs. So I personally don't care about this, but I understand that many people do. But I would argue that they tend to care more about this stuff when they don't like the player already, and therefore Manny Ramirez would be another example of this, where they can go after them for that, and then but then conveniently ignore it when it's players like Andy Pettit and it's players like David Ortiz and it's players like the jiggly fun gif worthy Bartolo Colon.
Right. Well, okay, so there's two things that I'm not sure I totally agree with. First, on Andy Pettit, he didn't get caught using HGH as he was using it. So this was something that came out in the Mitchell report and through his trainer, through the testimony that was taken, that it actually happened years before, if I'm remembering this correctly. So he didn't, like, fail any kind of test where he was saying, oh, this is the only time I've done it. Now, I'm not saying that he didn't do it many times, but I think – I don't know. I think we need to make sure that we're getting the history part of this right. In that, you know, when that Mitchell report came out, this was all before, like, I believe it's all before, like, the drug testing really began in earnest when they were talking about what these guys were doing. But
yeah, which would also apply to Mark McGuire and Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens.
Right. Well, and the other thing I would say is that I don't think that Sammy Sosa is associated less than David Ortiz with PEDs. I mean, I have a very hard time saying, like, that he didn't fail a drug test when he didn't even play in the drug testing era for the most part.
Oh, I agree. But Sosa gets this all the time. Like, this is one of the reasons that Sosa never gets any. But do you think David Ortiz is I think David Ortiz is going to sail into the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. Do you?
Yeah, I think he will, too. And I mean, I think that I don't know really what to think about him. I don't have any idea what he was doing. I did see Sammy Sosa up close several times, and it was like you took body parts from Mr. Potato Head and just put them together. I mean, he looked like a freak of nature. Like, I don't need much. I can't stupid myself down for the sake of saying that nobody ever had any proof. Like, I can't do it. I find it very insulting when people expect me to do it. Well, you can't really judge. No, I can't sit there and say, like, well, we're picking on him and he didn't deserve it, when he was, to me, the poster boy of the steroid era. You know, all of a sudden breaking through 66 home runs for no reason at all, except that his muscles had muscles had muscles. And so, you know, I don't know. I think we're getting a little off topic. I mean, the point being that I think I agree with you. It's really just about who we like and the fact that we don't really want to shun Bartolo Colon because he's just too much fun. It's just he's really too good for baseball at this point to just put him in this corner and say, you bad boy, you shouldn't have done that, and now we're not going to like you anymore, and you're not going to be one of our, you know, stars that we do memes and have fun with on social media.
Yeah, I mean to me, the argument against the idea, bring up the Sosa thing once again, like, sure, he had muscles upon muscles on muscles because he was using more primitive drugs that they use now. they have much better drugs now. But the idea that he was somehow cheating any more or any less, I think that's that's why I tend to ultimately just throw my hands up on this stuff and be like, we're just never going to know. Maybe some people had better draw. Like I tend to not, that's why I don't like, listen, there are players I don't like and there are players that I like, but I tend to generally try to keep this PED stuff out of it either way. It's very funny. There's later on, actually come April, we're going to have Rick Ankiel on this podcast. I'm going to have Rick Ankiel on. He has an autobiography coming out. And there, of course, he famously was listed in the document as well about performance-enhancing drugs. There's a chapter in the book where he talks about it, and he says, yep, it's true, it happened, I had the HGH, and then we just kind of move on. And it's not really right. A big part of the book, and it's not really a big part of his legacy. That is the hope I have moving forward, is when these things happen, you blink and kind of move on. And already, I mean, but of course, again, look at a guy like Ryan Braun. Like, Ryan Braun, I think he is disliked not because he failed the drug test, so I think it's really started. It was that he, as you've discussed, I think quite eloquently before, dug in so much about this is not happening, and that guy screwed up my sample, and this guy did this. That is what really hurt his reputation, not so much using the drugs.
Yeah, right. And I think that we also kind of maybe differ in our philosophies on why, on how many guys are doing it now. I mean, you think that it's just that the drugs are a lot more sophisticated now and they're able to maybe beat tests a little bit easier. I feel that, and another reason why I just am so soured on that era of PEDs, because I feel like people did it not because they wanted to, because they felt like they had to. And it was because of those big superstars that kind of started that whole thing. I do not think that players want to be doing these drugs. I think they want to be playing naturally. And every time a guy fails a drug test, it makes them mad because they feel like, am I still playing on an uneven field? Do I have to go back to doing these drugs to stay in the major leagues? And I really do feel that way. I think that there are, you know, a percentage of cheaters that are still getting away with it. But I think for the most part, when you hear the outrage from the players, it's because, oh my God, dude, seriously, stop it. Because I don't want to have to go back to doing them. And I don't want to lose my job in the major league. So that's kind of how I feel like they are looking at it. Maybe I'm being naive.
Well, I think your ultimate point, though, is correct. They're not doing that when they're looking at Bartolo Colon. And I think perhaps either they should be, or they shouldn't look like, or they shouldn't think that about anything. Because I think there's no better example, regardless of whatever. We're not saying he's specifically accusing him of using drugs right now, but clearly, like, we're all like, wow, how does he keep doing this? It's right. Like, well. So yes. And again, I don't really care, but if you're the type of person that has cared in the past about that, this would be something I think you might care about. Okay. The last thing I want to talk about, we have a short show this week, is to talk about the NL West. Made our predictions this week. My big theory in this division, I think we can all agree, the Dodgers are the favorites. You know, I'm always higher than the Dodgers on the Dodgers than you are. And hey, they keep winning division championships and falling apart in the playoffs. But my thing with the division this year, I'm curious your thoughts on this. I think Colorado is the second best team in this division. I have Colorado Rockies fever. I am super excited about Colorado. I think the Giants are still pretty good, though. I think their rotation they're relying a little bit too much on rotations. I'm wary when you're relying on older pitchers in a rotation. But I love Colorado. I wish they would have signed Encarnacion rather than Desmond. But that lineup looks awesome. And that pitching looks potentially average. And I think that's enough.
Yeah, no, I like the Rockies. I'm not sure that I'm not sure that they are the second best team in the division. I like them a lot. You do make good points about the Giants, but I still think the Giants are going to win. They're going to be in second place. It's going to be the Dodgers, the Giants, the Rockies. But yeah, no, I think the Rockies have an up and coming pitching staff. I think they're teaching them how to be successful at Coors and on the road, obviously. But the lineup's great. They have Buddy Black managing, and they've kind of been building force to be a little bit better than mediocre. And I think that this is going to be a really interesting year. I've been kind of on board with them I was really on board with them last year too. I wasn't surprised when they were sort of still hanging around the trade deadline. And, you know, health is going to be, of course, the key for everyone. The difference being that the Dodgers can weather a lot of injuries, and they always do. So I'm no longer going to be bullish on, I'm not going to really be critical about the Dodgers anymore, because they always prove me wrong.
Okay. I understand. Of course, this is the year they're going to completely collapse and you're going to look silly about it. Listen, I know you need to go talk to Jim Leyland. So, I'll wrap us up here, but, Allison, thanks for coming on as always. And, we'll be back next week.
Okay. Thank you, Will.
Yep. All right, so I will finish up because Allison is gone now, because she has to go talk to Jim Leyland and his nicotine-stained mustache. So I will finish up. My major thing about the NL West is, generally speaking, the Dodgers look to me like far and away better than everybody else. Once again, I don't quite buy the Fangraphs idea that they are. Fangraphs or Baseball Perspectives? I think it's Fangraphs that has them like seven games above the Cubs, which seems high. I think it actually is Baseball Perspectives. It doesn't matter. Point is, now that they've merged the podcast over there, I can't figure out what the Effectively Wild podcast is, if it's on Fangraphs or Baseball Perspectives anymore. Point is, the Dodgers obviously look like the best team in the division. And I actually did a big preview of this division on SportsOnEarth.com, and I picked Colorado to finish second. I think Colorado is the only second. I think they're a serious wild card contender this year. That lineup is terrifying. Again, better if they had Encarnacion than if they had Desmond. I still don't quite understand that move, but I also think when they made that move, everyone in the kind of smart baseball analysts was like, oh, well, we were kind of going to be up on the Rockies, but then they made that very dumb move. Never mind. But I might argue, I still think that team is very good. The team's got a stacked lineup, and with Gray and some of those other guys, I think Chatwood is good. You need average pitching out of those guys, and I think they can have that average pitching. I think the Diamondbacks will take a slight step forward this year. How could they not after that mess? And there's still a lot of talent on that team. I thought it was telling that the new front office did not do a big fire sale and start over, which is an intriguing move. We'll see how that works out. And San Diego is going to be terrible. We all know they're going to be terrible. Will Myers is the best player on that team. They just gave him a long extension, and I'm still not entirely sold that he's particularly that great. So those are your NL West. I'm sorry we had a little bit of issue with Allison today. She had to run out to go interview Jim Leland. We're doing this podcast so early in the morning on Tuesday, so we wanted to get one out and make sure that we had one this week. Next week, excited. It's the Selection Sunday, by the way. So we should have our yearly, our annual, our regular once a year. All three of those things mean the exact same definition. Hopefully with Matt Norlander. We should have Matt Norlander from CBS. We're going to be trying to schedule that this week. It's one of my favorite podcasts every year. That'll be a blast because Selection Sunday is coming. But anyway, so thank you for this truncated podcast. Hope you, as always, the music is by the Sundogs. Sundogs have a new album coming out, by the way, and we're going to probably, we may even shift up the music. That may, long-time listeners may be very confused because we'll be shaking up the music to get something off the Sundogs' new albums. But please give us a review on iTunes. Say some nice things. Otherwise, we'll be back next week. Email me, WilliamFLeach@yahoo.com or Leach@sportsnet.com. Holler anytime. Have a great week. Enjoy the World Baseball Classic. See you.